Creating your own reality. Is it possible for me? I am Jennifer K. Hill, the Consciousness Architect, and I am here to tell you that it's not only possible, it's closer than you might think. Welcome to the show. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Regarding Consciousness. I am Jennifer K. Hill, CEO of OptiMatch, and so grateful to be here with you as we further explore what is consciousness, how does it show up in all of its different forms, and how can we play together in this space we call consciousness. Today, we have a best-selling author joining us, Anodea Judith. We're going to be talking about one of her latest books, Goddesses. She is a globally recognized teacher and author of several best-selling books on chakras, psychology, yoga, social change, and women's leadership, which have been translated into 28 languages. She is the founder and director of the teaching organization Sacred Centers and a member, which we both are, of the Evolutionary Leaders Council and has been called a prophet for our time. And Odea, I love that we figured out we're both evolutionary leaders as we were hopping on here, one of the many synchronicities that brought us together here to talk about your beautiful new book. So thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you. There's nothing more important than evolution and consciousness and the relationship between the two, because that's what we are evolving, is it not?
That is so true. And I love that your book is talking about this goddess energy. And there has been this divine emergence of the feminine that started about 5-10 years ago, really prominently in the last several years. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write Goddesses.
I would say, first of all, that movement goes back much farther. There were a lot of books written in the 60s and 70s on the goddess when that was the archaeologists were first unearthing these goddess figurines and finding out that, oh, once we worshipped a great mother. And at that time, I actually started writing a book on the goddess. And I was ordained as a priestess in 1985, quite a long time ago, and promised to serve her above and beyond all else. And then my work unfolded and I traveled around the world teaching my workshops. And I was cleaning my office one day, and I came across this notebook full of the writing I had done 30, 40 years ago on the goddess. And I went, this isn't half bad. I wonder if you'll ever do anything with it. Maybe you should finish this. And I folded it up and I put it back on the shelf. And then, as I mentioned when we were chatting before, I was on an evolutionary leaders call, and I was put in a breakout session with Ariel Patricia of Sacred Stories Publishing, and she was looking for someone to, and she knew of me and my work, and she was looking for someone to write a book on the goddess. And so it was a manifestation that really, the goddess found me, and that's how it often works. It wasn't like I went out looking for that. It just, I went, if I'm supposed to do it, let me know. And that happened. So I said, yes.
It's beautiful how we can follow the breadcrumbs of synchronicity to our destiny. And in fact, the call I was on just before this, I have a dear friend who's my accountability buddy, and we do a once-a-day call for 15 minutes to support each other. She's a best-selling children's book author, and she supports me with my endeavors. And she said, Jen, I'm going to send you a video, and it's from Louise Hay, where, for those of you who aren't familiar, Louise Hay was the creator of Hay House, one of the most prolific other book publishers out there. And she was sharing in her story that she, just like you, she just followed the crumbs. She followed the path that led her to her destiny of becoming this world-renowned author, thought leader. And so often that's the case. And I know in the book, you share some beautiful, profound stories tying into the prophetess aspect. One of the stories I think you share is about a dream you had. Do you want to share about that and your sister and how she came into the dream?
I'm not recalling that. It's probably in the middle section of the book, there are stories by many different people.
Ah, yes.
And that is probably a story by one of the other writers. And even though I read them all, I don't know that I could recite it quite as well. I have two stories, beginning and ending of that section. I could tell one of those. Right. But I want to make a comment on the breadcrumbs. There is a song about the goddess. I won't belabor people with my singing, but I'll speak the words. It says, have you seen the goddess, friend? I search in all my travels. I pick up the slightest thread, her mystery unravels. Mm. And so it is the breadcrumbs. It is picking up this little thread, and one thing leads to another, and it leads you deeper into the mystery of creation. And that is really what the goddess is about: magic and mystery and pageantry and celebration and joy and the sacred and seeing the divine existing within everything around us.
It is so true, is that everything has energy in it, and we are all energy. And so too, just like this desk I'm sitting in front of or the computer, we write things off sometimes as being arbitrary. Oh, it's a desk, it's a this. And yet, if we approached everything, even our interactions with the most mundane objects in our life, with the same reverence, that same goddess energy, then what would be possible if we elevated the sacred to a new level? Talk to us a little bit about that. From the goddess standpoint, what are some of the elements and ways? I think at the end of the book, you share some tools for that, of how we can embrace the goddess more in our own lives. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. First of all, since the goddess is not an abstract concept, but is something that's imminent in everything, she's in you, she's in me, she's in my cat curled up on the chair next to me, she's in the trees budding forth in the spring right now. Because she's in everything, when we realize that is infused with a kind of divine consciousness, then we treat it as sacred. And what happened when the goddess cultures and religions and beliefs were plowed into the underground, basically, and replaced with a masculine monotheism, is that was an abstract, otherworldly concept rather than in everything. And we were allowed to treat the planet like dirt. And there was no sacredness in anything. And that's led us to an environmental crisis that we have today, health crises, because we don't regard the body as sacred. And so many of the practices that celebrated the interconnection of all life, the unity of all life, were denigrated. And with that, the values of the feminine were also denigrated. And it's not just about women were denigrated. Certainly that happened. But all the values that represented, those values are deeply needed in our world today. The values of compassion, the values of collaboration, of love, of beauty, of creativity, of nurturance. The mother nurtures the child. Those things were deemed inferior and we're paying the price. So when we bring back the goddess cultures, not exactly the way they were then in a more earlier time of evolution, we can't do that. We don't even know what they were. So much of it was wiped out. But when we bring back the values and bring them into our modern culture and bring them into partnership with the masculine, then we bring our world into balance. And that's really what the practices are about. How do we bring the goddess back into ourselves, into the world, into consciousness, into the collective consciousness? How do we make the archetype of the goddess as equal as the archetype of the god?
It's such a wonderful opportunity for us to explore. What would it take? What will it take? What do you think, Anodea? What is the secret for us to shift our consciousness, to shift from the old patriarchy? It's what we're seeing. It's what we're doing in the Evolutionary Leaders Group. What every single one of us is up to is that we're seeing this new emergence, this evolution of the old systems, like you said, where everything was, I'll take what I want, it's mine, and I will conquer and destroy, to this beautiful allowing and unfolding, almost like the petals of a flower just opening up to the sunlight. How do we begin to shift our own consciousness and then make that manifest in the world?
First of all, we have to hold these values as equal. And it's not just that we let go of all the masculine values of taking charge and getting things done. You're a CEO of a company. You've certainly had to do quite a bit of that, or you wouldn't have been CEO and able to run the company. We don't just all sit back and go yin and put our feet up and say it's all going to happen by itself. There's a balance, but we need to begin to value some of the quieter, more yin qualities of rest, of silence, of going inside, of taking of the cycle of nature, that nature is not a straight line. She is cyclic. There's birth and there's death and there's life in between. And the patriarchal values just want to go in one direction incessantly, and that's not sustainable. So we need a different value system that sees everything as connected. And I don't see that the goddess is T-H-E answer. Yeah, any more than any one thing in this new paradigm we're birthing is the answer. But she is an essential part of the answer. And we will not find the answer without including her.
It's interesting how, what's that?
Oh, just to go on with that a moment, we are birthing a new paradigm. We are birthing a new paradigm together. And to conceive, of course, takes masculine and feminine, takes a sperm and an egg to conceive. We need the masculine, but it is the feminine that understands the birthing process. And we cannot give birth to something new without the feminine being part of it.
Yeah, there was a teacher I had many years ago. I think I referenced her in another episode. Did you ever come across Alison Armstrong's work?
Oh, sure.
Love her work on the divine queen and the energy of the queen, the king. And one of my favorite teachings that she has is this element of space, that just a mother cannot give birth to a child without having the space of the womb. I think she had given an example in a class many years ago about New York City. Here you have one of the most busy, bustling metropolitans in the world, and yet you have Central Park, which is this beautiful space that allows for everything to happen around it. So I think part of it, just like you said, with the masculine and the feminine, you can have this energy, this yang, this bustling energy, and there still at the same time is that equal and opposite yin, that they both have the equal amounts of space. And any time we lean to yin, to yang, that's where we see something get out of balance. So how could we invite more of that into our lives, of finding out where are we out of balance? Where is maybe our masculine more prominent? I know I saw it for myself in corporate America, to your point. There was a period where people sometimes even said I was cold. And I speak very candidly about being a recovering jerk, because all I knew how to do in a day was to mimic what I saw on TV, Devil Wears Prada. I didn't have any good female role models or leaders to emulate at the time. How can we be the leaders, be the pave makers and the way showers for the new up and coming generations of men and women and they and them and everybody else who wants to be able to use all of this?
Yeah, let me grab something here. This is another product that I had written just before I met Arielle, and this is called She Rises, Awakening Our Archetypes of Feminine Leadership. And this came to me during the U.S. 2016 election when Hillary Clinton was running, and I was reading, I'm a pretty avid reader of the news, and all the comments about her. Her voice was too harsh. She was too masculine. There was the uppity woman. When I looked at what we think of as a leader, and if a man spoke with their voice a little raised or passionate, they wouldn't say anything about him. And so I looked at this inherent bias when we regard what is a leader and what does someone have as need as the qualities or the characteristics of a leader. And having studied the goddess archetype for so many years in history and archetypes in general, and being a psychologist, archetypal psychology, I realized that women lead differently than men. And we have many archetypal roles of leadership that, along with the denigration of the goddess, those roles, some of them were lost entirely, and others were just looked at as, well, that's not very important, like being a mother. What more important role is there for our future than the healthy raising of our children, than raising our children with the utmost consciousness and developing consciousness within them? But yet that role is very minimized. It's not something you put on your resume when you're job hunting, even though it may be the best training for being a leader that you could have. So I did this set of 38 cards of different archetypes of women's leadership. For one, happens to be on the top is the oracle. And the oracle, like the priestesses at Delphi that were the oracles, were the most respected members of society. Kings and statesmen would travel hundreds of miles, which wasn't easy in those days, to consult with the oracle. And whatever she said, wars were started or ended based on what she said. Empires were founded or destroyed. And so there was deep respect for the roles that women played until they were lost. And so when you say, how do we do this? It's starting to name these archetypes of women's leadership so they can be recognized as valuable. One of them toward the end of the deck is the shepherdess. And the shepherdess is the one that is not leading out in front. She's the one at the meeting that makes sure everybody has the notes, makes sure everybody has enough water, makes sure that somebody that's missing gets a text to say, where are you? The meeting's starting. She's the one that is looking for the child in the classroom that's lagging behind. And we might say, that's not leadership. That's just bringing up the rear. But the shepherdess is always keeping the whole in mind rather than the part. And it's the counterpart to the woman or man leading out in front and leading the brigade that someone is bringing up the rear and equally important. And yet it's not recognized. Some of the archetypes I talk about are not ancient. They're newly emerging, like the activist. In studies, it shows that 60% of the activists are women. So women are actually leading that activist. That was not a word I ever heard when I was a child. We never used the word activist. People were pacifists. I know that's a different word. But so some of the diva is an emerging female archetype. Look at Taylor Swift and what she's doing. And she's being quite a leader of consciousness through the archetype of the diva. So that's one way that we bring this into balance so that men can recognize these archetypes and see the shepherdess on the team as someone valuable. And women can recognize that in themselves and awaken what I call the superpowers of those archetypes.
Yeah. I think what's fascinating coming from my background, like you, I know you have a psychology background, and I'm always fascinated by what motivates us as human beings. That's what we focus on at OptiMatch. And I think what I've noticed is no matter how many different types of assessments, archetypes that there might be, I think that our goal as human beings, men or women, they or them, is to evolve to encapsulate all of the beauty, even from the zodiac, things like numerology and zodiac signs and all these different elements. And yet as we evolve, we might be triggered. That's been what's so interesting is the parts of ourselves that we either deny because they're our shadow selves, or perhaps for whatever other reason it triggers us, those are the opportunities that we have to integrate those into ourselves instead of resisting them, to embrace them and go, oh, wow. There was a great story. One of my favorite podcasts I listen to is called Weekly Energy Boost. One of the hosts of it, Eli Sheva, shares a story of being a Kabbalah teacher. And she has this woman who is driving her crazy. She comes to her and she says, I can't stand this woman I work with. She is so annoying. She always talks like this. And she's always popping her head over my cubicle. And this woman's crazy. Woman had been reading of Kabbalah for a long time. So Eli Sheva says to her, have you considered that perhaps you are that person to someone else? And the woman's, no, I've been saying this. That's impossible. I've looked under every rug. That's not true. And Eli Sheva says, okay, you could be right. I invite you to just go explore, be curious about it, and just see if there's maybe one person in your life that you might not be aware of consciously that you might be that person. And a week or two later, she comes back to her and she says, you'll never believe it. I figured out who it was. And Eli Sheva says, yes. And she said, it's my husband. I didn't realize that he worked at home and I was the person who's always popping my head over when I would get home from work. Hi, honey, how are you? What do you want? And begging for his attention. And she said, the moment I realized that, a week later, the woman was transferred from my office and poof.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen in so many cases. So the question is, when we feel compelled to judge somebody or something or to resist it, where is there perhaps a shadow of ourselves in that? Or what is it that we're resisting that maybe is innately in us? And how can we allow for the wholeness in ourselves and everybody else? Because that's what you're talking about, is as much we all have the shepherdess, we all have the oracle in us. And can we allow for all those pieces and choose actively in any moment which one we want to nurture?
Yeah, the way I look at it, and I have portions of my workshops that are actually devoted to this, is that whatever you judge, it's not so much that you necessarily are that person, but it is something you have repressed in yourself. So let's say I'll take one of mine. It used to be I was very judgmental of my husband, who would put his feet up on the couch for most of Sunday and read the paper while I was busy putting things away and cleaning up. And how can you just sit there? But I was a workaholic. And so what was rejected in me was the permission to kick back and relax. And so what happens when there's a part of you that's rejected is that when you see it in someone else, there's a little unconscious jealousy. And the same judgment you have on yourself for doing it, you have on that person. And so what I teach is that when that happens, look at what you judge and then ask, how was I not allowed to do this? How was that suppressed? Maybe you judge somebody that's messy, but you had to be super neat. Maybe you judge someone that's loud and you're a very quiet person. You weren't allowed to be the center of attention and you resent someone who is. So that's always the key to what has been repressed. And you mentioned that with the archetypes, or that we have these things that are repressed. And how do we reclaim it? First, we study it. Once I got that, I would look at my husband sitting there with his reading the paper back when before we got electronic news, with his feet up on the couch. And I go, how does he do that? All right, let's see if I can try it. Okay, put up my left leg, put up my right leg. I get a novel, not a nonfiction book that I'm educating myself on, and I try it out. And at first it will feel very foreign. But if you reclaim what was an innate healthy part, the shadow will show up in an extreme part, but there's a healthy root to the shadow. So what's the healthy root of being lazy? You get to take it easy once in a while. Not that you want to become a lazy bum, but that if you reclaim that, and once I reclaim that kind of thing in myself, that doesn't show up in my life anymore.
It's so true. So in the same way. Yeah, I love that story. That's such a great story that illustrates it. And I even tell when I coach people or help friends out, I say, write down what triggers you, because if we're not aware, then it's going to always blindside us and take us out. And thank God you had the conscious awareness to be able to go, oh, I noticed that this really irks me when he does this. And then to come from a place of curiosity rather than judgment. And I think that is freedom of consciousness, is to be able to not be at the effect, to be able to play with, be curious about, and engage with, is this what I'm committed to? Is this not what I'm committed to? What triggers me? What doesn't? And let's be honest, some days we do not have it in ourselves to work on our triggers. And so be kind. Like, I'll put a note in my smartphone or in my notes section of my phone that'll just say, wow, I noticed when XYZ happened, I allowed myself. That's the other word that I was just teaching somebody this week, is I use the word, I allowed myself to be triggered by. Because when we say, you triggered me, you made me feel, you're automatically putting somebody in an adversarial position against you, as opposed to, wow, I noticed I allowed myself to get a little activated when XY, when you were sitting on the couch on Sunday. And then there becomes an opportunity for a conversation rather than being defensive with one another.
Yeah. Carl Jung said, we do not become enlightened by seeking after figures of light. We become enlightened by making the shadow conscious.
So beautiful, Anodea. Tell us, Anodea, where can people pick up the book? Where can they learn more about these incredible cards you've created, the Oracle cards, your other book? Where would they go?
Yeah, the cards are only available on my website. And that is, that particular website is SheRisesMovement.com, SheRisesMovement.com. And the book is available there too. And the book, Goddess, Blessed Reunions with the Feminine Face of the Divine, is available on Amazon, on my website that I just mentioned, or anadeajudith.com. I have several, many websites, but it's available in those two places. And I have workshops, and there's a lot more on the cards. I do workshops and trainings for women on that, and how to lead circles, awakening these archetypes in women, and teach it all over the world.
Incredible, Anodea. Is there any other closing thought you'd like to leave our listeners and viewers with today?
To return back to the topic of the goddess, a religion without a goddess is halfway to atheism. And the word theism means that the divine is within everything. And so the word atheist was first used in the Roman Empire for the early Christians, because they denied the multiplicity of gods and goddesses. And so they were called atheists. They were against the idea that the divine was in everything. So it's very interesting. And that the goddess is not God in drag or Jehovah with lipstick. She is a wholly different energy that we have lost. And we talk about repression, and it's been repressed in us. And when people find it, they feel like, oh, that's what I always have been. That feels like coming back home. So I talk about coming back home to the goddess. Home is holy daughter of Mother Earth. And there is a divine order in Mother Earth. We come back home to that. We start to set things right.
Coming home to ourselves and embracing the goddess within us. That is the message today from Anodea Judith, who is joining us today to talk about one of her many best-selling books, The Goddess. Thank you for being here with us today. Thank you for trusting. And I invite each and every one of us to ask ourselves, where is the goddess in us? Where is the goddess in the person we're speaking with in this moment? Can we tap into it? Can we appreciate it? And can we reignite the passion for the goddess in our own hearts? I am Jennifer Cahill, and it is a privilege and an honor to get to spend time with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Great to be with you.